Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. For generations, Missourians have taken to marshes with sharp ears, trained eyes, and fish baskets they hope to fill with at least one animal big enough to take home for a meal. And the animal at the center of this long-time cultural practice is, you guessed it, the humble frog. STLPR's Lauren Brennecke recently reported on this tradition, and she joins us now to talk about it. Lauren, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So how and when is frog hunting done?
So it's traditionally done at sunset on June 31st, if you're following Missouri Department of Conservation protocol. And it goes until late October, whenever mating season sort of calms down, and it'll stop in the wintertime as it gets too cold to go outside.
Mm-hmm. And is there a preferred method for this hunting?
Yeah, so you said earlier gigging, and a lot of people aren't totally familiar with what that is, but it's just one way to go frog hunting. You can fish for frogs, like other things that live in the water, or mm-hmm. you can use traditional hunting methods. People can shoot them with a bow and arrow, shoot them with a gun, but the gigging is preferred because it's really inexpensive, and it's one of the conservation agents I spoke to said it was like the chess or the pickleball of hunting mm-hmm. because any age can do it.
Okay. And what is the implement that's used? It's like a little trident, right?
Yeah. So it's a wooden or a metal stick. And at the end of it, there's a three-pronged, it looks like a fork, three or four-pronged with spikes on the end. Mm-hmm. And that's the part that actually goes into the frog.
Mm-hmm. So the folks that you talked with for your piece, Scott Boyd is one of them. And he's a conservation educator. Mm-hmm. And Scott teaches people the proper way to hunt frogs. So what does an improper way involve?
Yeah, with frogs, there's actually a little bit of a margin of error you can make bigger than something like squirrel hunting, which is another thing that people do.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they don't die immediately if you're gigging improperly or gigging with improper tools. So he teaches how to maintain the equipment, even though this equipment is less high maintenance than some others.
Mm-hmm.
So he teaches about making sure that the animal is ready to be fully harvested by the time you're ready to cook it, and also making sure that you're doing it responsibly, so not doing it in a pond that's too small to have next season be ready for frogs if you take all these out now,
mm-hmm.
and how to identify which frogs can actually be harvested.
And how do you identify that?
Yeah, so there are two types of frogs, the green frog and the bullfrog. Any size is game, though. So if you see one, there's a way to tell with its ears how far back its ears are on its head. And also, I think with the bumps, so you can tell by that. But when you're gigging in the dark, it's kind of difficult to tell. So the Missouri Department of Conservation does have like a whoops policy. But those are the most common frogs in Missouri. So it's not likely that you'll find another variety of frog.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a particular reason that nighttime hunting is that it's better, even if that darkness makes it more difficult to see what you're doing?
Yeah, I think at nighttime, you can legally do it during the day. At nighttime, though, frogs come out. They're nocturnal. And the hunter's flashlights will gleam against the frog's skin, and that's how they can identify where they'll get them. Also at night, it's easier to hear the croaking, whereas during the day you'll hear cars, other things going by.
Mm-hmm.
Nighttime is the best time to do it if you want to do it effectively.
Right. And where is this happening?
So it's anywhere that has a large enough body of water to support frogs. There are some places in St. Louis City where you can find frogs in a puddle. If you can find them, it's fair game as long as it's not private property.
Okay. So you went to St. Charles to do this, right?
Yeah, just outside.
Mm-hmm. And was it a successful night out?
By conservation department standards, no. We only got one frog on the night of. You can get up to eight. That's the limit. They weren't as loud this season, which was unexpected because of the cicadas.
Right,
people thought
right.
they'd be eating well. But on some nights, I remember you can get, I mean, it's eight per person. So I remember people getting eight per person, and then it's a feast.
Oh, wow. So why is it, Lauren, that people hunt frogs?
I could answer that with a variety of ways, but I think now, since people aren't hunting most of the time near us for survival, it's kind of a communal way to bond with families, and it's passed down. So the tradition itself hasn't changed much, really, ever since flashlights were invented, probably. So it's a fun, cheap way to get together with family and also kind of connect on a generational basis. People are using the same recipes that they used hundreds of years ago.
So speaking of recipes, how is it that the frog is prepared? I mean, are they using all of it or is it just the legs?
So hardcore hunters will use all of it. You can use the head as fishing bait later on. You can also use it to use it for when you're planting things, you can put it in underneath as a fertilizer.
Okay.
Traditionally, from what I've seen, you can just plop the heads back wherever they will be concealed, and a squirrel or something else will take care of them, eat them later on. You'll just use the legs. So people usually cut the legs off, fry them, batter them, eat them like chicken wings.
And you made some for us, right?
I did.
And how did you prepare those?
So these ones, I did half of them fried in a pan and half of them in an air fryer, since I don't have a deep fryer at my convenience. They were pretty good the second day. They're better fresh, which is what the photojournalist and I experienced on our night.
And we're going to get to that, too. So, Lauren, in the course of your reporting on this, and specific to food sources, was there something that you wanted to learn about that you sort of hit dead ends with and that you're still interested in learning?
Yeah, there were a couple things. The most interesting part of it was how this spans cultures, really. And so when I talk to a lot of people in my inner circles, frog is natural to them. It's like, okay, we're eating frog. What's new? We've been doing it forever. But for sometimes more elite crowds, they immediately jump to things like French cuisine or food in New York City. I wanted to explore that more and kind of look at the class divide between frog here and frog, and it's a popular street food in places like Vietnam. It was difficult to condense that into a 4-minute story and even to decide whether or not I could do it justice within my story. So I wanted to look at that as well as sourcing frog locally, since some restaurants serve it.
And one of those restaurants is Hodak's, right? I jumped onto, no pun intended, I went on to Yelp to seek out restaurants that do serve frog. And I saw a lot of listings there. But then when I went to the sites for these eateries, I couldn't see frog on the menu. Is it one of those things where you have to know to ask for it? Did you get a sense of that at all?
Yeah, I did. And I ran into that, too, when I was looking for a restaurant. I think it might also be seasonal. During the summertime, it might be easier to find, and if they're locally sourcing it, I did have trouble having people answer where they got the frog. Hodak's gets them from a normal commercial supplier, same place you get chicken wings, but I'm not sure, and that's something I'd love to explore more.
Yeah. Now, social media is going to social media, and there were a couple of folks who saw a Facebook post about your piece, and they left disparaging and disapproving comments about folks who hunt and eat frog. What do you think those commenters are missing, Lauren?
I think in order to have a conversation about that touches at all on hunting, I mean, we have to all agree you can have your stance on to eat or not to eat meat and to hunt or to not to hunt. But some people were upset at bringing a sort of spotlight to this quote-unquote culture. I think that's a big part of what they're missing, and it might be difficult to understand how much of an influence this has had on Missouri culture, not only frog hunting, but hunting in general. It's not just in the past either. A large majority of people that I know from my background did or still do hunt. And so other than that, my job as a journalist is to talk about what people are doing. And I think that's maybe something that people aren't used to hearing about.
Yeah. So you mentioned photos earlier, mm-hmm. and the pictures that go with your story, they're taken by STLPR's Sophie Pro. They're really striking. Mm-hmm. Now, Sophie had never been on a frog hunt. How was it that you prepared her?
Yeah. Another interesting thing that I thought about when preparing Sophie is she's from New York, and so I wasn't fully aware of how much Sophie knew about going out hunting and going out to very far from urban places. I talked to her a lot about this might be disgusting for you to see, and you can stay as far as you want away from it as long as you think you get the shot. She was prepared for it, thankfully, but I could definitely understand taking someone out who hasn't been before. You would want to tell them that this is not going to be a clean process. Ethically clean, question mark, but physically clean, definitely not. Mm-hmm. It's messy, but it's fun. And so I talked to her a lot about that, and we're going to be tromping through some water.
Yeah. And in the last 30 seconds mm-hmm. or so, you have a personal connection to frog hunting because you used to go with your grandfather, and mm-hmm. you were talking about your family. Is there something you learned in the reporting that maybe helped you understand what you were doing when you were a kid, sort of going out in the dark?
Yeah, I think now that I'm looking back on it, I realize most people do it to get connected back to nature. And it sounds counterintuitive that you're taking away nature, but I connected with my grandfather in that way, that he just wanted to go outside and kind of place himself back into the ecosystem that we kind of feel disconnected from.
Mm-hmm. Is he around to have yeah. seen this, and what did he think?
Absolutely, he loved it. He still goes out frog hunting now, and he was proud that I'm bringing some country to the city.
Lauren Brannicke is a reporter at St. Louis Public Radio. Lauren, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Elaine Shaw. Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.